within us. By his analysis, showing us the guilt of Oedipus, the poet urges us to recognize our own inner self, in which these impulses, even if suppressed, are still present. The comparison with which the chorus leaves us. Behold, this Oedipus who unraveled the famous riddle, and who was a man of eminent virtue, a man who trusted neither to popularity nor to the fortune of his citizens. See how great a storm of adversity hath at last overtaken him. Act 5, Scene 4. This warning applies to ourselves and to our pride, to us who have grown so wise and so powerful in our own estimation since the years of our childhood. Like Oedipus, we live in ignorance of the wishes that offend morality, wishes which nature has forced upon us, and after the revelation of which we want to avert every glance from the scenes of our childhood. In the very text of Sophocles' tragedy, there is an unmistakable reference to the fact that the Oedipus legend originates in an extremely old dream material, which consists of the painful disturbance of the relation towards one's parents by means of the first impulses of sexuality. Jocasta comforts Oedipus, who is not yet enlightened, but who has become worried on account of the oracle, by mentioning to him the dream which is dreamt by so many people, though she attaches no significance to it. For it hath already been the lot of many men in dreams to think themselves partners of their mother's bed. But he passes most easily through life to whom these circumstances are trifles. Act 4, Scene 3. The dream of having sexual intercourse with one's mother occurred at that time, as it does today, to many people, who tell it with indignation and astonishment. As may be understood, it is the key to the tragedy and the complement to the dream of the death of the father. The story of Oedipus is the reaction of the imagination to these two typical dreams, and just as the dream, when occurring to an adult, is experienced with feelings of resistance, so the legend must contain terror and self-chastisement. The appearance, which it further assumes, is the result of an uncomprehending secondary elaboration which tries to make it serve theological purposes. Cf. The Dream Material of Exhibitionism. The attempt to reconcile divine omnipotence with human responsibility must, of course, fail with this material, as with every other. I must not leave the typical dream of the death of dear relatives without somewhat further elucidating the subject of their significance for the theory of the dream in general. These dreams show us a realization of the very unusual case where the dream thought, which is being created by the repressed wish, completely escapes the censor and is transferred to the dream without alteration. There must be present peculiar conditions making possible such an outcome. I find circumstances favorable to these dreams in the two following factors. First, there is no wish which we believe further from us. We believe such a wish would never occur to us in a dream. The dream censor is therefore not prepared for this monstrosity, just as the legislation of Solon was incapable of establishing a punishment for patricide. Secondly, the repressed and unsuspected wish is in just this case particularly often met by a fragment of the day's experience, in the shape of a concern about the life of the beloved person. This concern cannot be registered in the dream by any other means than by taking advantage of the wish that has the same content, for it is possible for the wish to mask itself behind the concern which has been awakened during the day. If one is inclined to think all this a more simple process, and that one merely continues during the night and in dreams what one has been concerned with during the day, the dream of the death of beloved persons is removed from all connection with dream explanation, and an easily reducible problem is uselessly retained. It is also instructive to trace the relation of these dreams to anxiety dreams. In the dream of the death of dear persons, the repressed wish has found a way of avoiding the censor and the distortion which it causes. In this case, the inevitable concomitant manifestation is that disagreeable sensations are felt in the dream. Thus, the dream of fear is brought about only when the censor is entirely or partially overpowered, and, on the other hand, the overpowering of the censor is made easier when fear has already been furnished by somatic sources. Thus it becomes obvious for what purpose the censor performs its office and practices dream distortion. It does this in order to prevent the development of fear or other forms of disagreeable emotion. I have spoken above of the egotism of the infantile mind, and I may now resume this subject in order to suggest that dreams preserve this characteristic, thus showing their connection with infantile life. Every dream is absolutely egotistical. In every dream the beloved ego appears, even though it may be in a disguised form. The wishes that are realized in dreams are regularly the wishes of this ego. It is only a deceptive appearance if interest in another person is thought to have caused the dream. I shall subject to analysis several examples which appear to contradict this assertion. 1. A boy not yet 4 years old relates the following. He saw a large dish garnished, and upon it a large piece of roast meat, and the meat was all of a sudden not cut to pieces, but eaten up. He did not see the person who ate it. Who may this strange person be of whose luxurious repast this little fellow dreams? The experiences of the day must give us the explanation of this. For a few days the boy had been living on a diet of milk according to the doctor's prescription, but on the evening of the day before the dream he had been naughty, and as a punishment he had been deprived of his evening meal. He had already undergone one such hunger cure, and had acted very bravely. He knew that he would get nothing to eat, but he did not dare to indicate by a word that he was hungry. Education was beginning to have its influence upon him. This is expressed even in the dream which shows the beginnings of dream disfigurement. There is no doubt that he himself is the person whose wishes are directed toward this abundant meal, and a meal of roast meat at that. But since he knows that this is forbidden him, he does not dare, as children do in the dream, cf. The Dream About Strawberries of My Little Anna, to sit down to the meal himself. The person remains anonymous. 2. Once I dream that I see on the show table of a bookstore a new number in the book lover's collection, the collection which I am in the habit of buying, art monographs, monographs on the history of the world, famous art centres, etc. The new collection is called Famous Orators, or Orations, and the first number bears the name of Dr. Lecher. In the course of analysis, it appears improbable that the fame of Dr. Lecher, the long-winded orator of the German opposition, should occupy my thoughts while I am dreaming. The fact is that a few days before I undertook the psychic cure of some new patients, and was now forced to talk for from 10 to 12 hours a day. Thus I myself am the long-winded orator.